Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We'll get into a two for Tuesday a little bit later on. It is Tuesday morning. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. Welcome back. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. And you can also text your text to that number, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay with us is to hook up with us is to like us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And if you go to facebook.com/Nick D Show right now and like us, you will see a link to the American Bystander, which is a new humor magazine that debuted just this last fall. And they're running a Kickstarter campaign right now to get the second issue out and going. And it'll run through April 21st. It's called American Bystander, and it's a new humor magazine. It's put together by some of the funniest and best writers and satirists working in the business today. And we are going to talk with the founder, Michael Gerber, as he joins us to talk about the Kickstarter campaign and humor magazines in general and stuff like that. Michael, welcome to the show.
Nice to be talking to you, Nick.
Yeah, I got to say, I am a huge fan.
That's great. Fantastic.
I think your stuff is really, really funny. And before we get into the American Bystander and, mm-hmm. and the Kickstarter campaign and all that stuff that we need to talk about, let's talk a little bit about how you started writing humor. And for people who don't know, you wrote the Barry Trotter series.
Oh, yes. About 10 years ago, I did a parody of Harry Potter, which was it was in the early 2000s, and it was kind of a period of time where the book publishing business was a little concerned about getting sued for parodies. So I had to self-publish that. I just married my wife, and I said, you know, now I want to publish this book. And she said, of course, go for it. So I knew that I had married the right person. But it turned out that it was a tremendous success in England, of all places, where you might think that they would have a little problem with a Yank making fun of Harry Potter.
Right.
But I'm such a Harry Potter fan that they took right to it.
Oh, well, you know, you can see that, and I mean, you can feel that in the stuff that you wrote.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're a fan when you read that. It's obviously written by a fan, and I think that read through. How did you start writing, and how did you know? What were your influences when you were growing up? What kind of humor did you enjoy?
Well, you know, it's funny, people ask me about this a lot because of The Bystander. But I was interested in humor. At a really, really early age. I was born in 1969. So by five or six, I was really interested in humor and in humor magazines. That was a really great time for comedy in America in general. Not only was Saturday Night Live just starting up, and there were a bunch of great stand-ups. There were also Mel Brooks movies, Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles.
But yeah, Michael, we grew up in the same era. I'm 50.
Yeah.
I'm 50 years old. So like
yeah,
everything
so you know,
you're talking about.
I mean,
yeah.
It was just a tremendously great time.
Yep.
And of course, National Lampoon and both National Lampoon and Mad Magazine were doing wonderful work then. And so I just kind of got hooked that young. And then after that, went to Yale and ran the humor magazine there called the Yale Record. That's mm-hmm. our version of the Harvard Lampoon. And then after that, kind of went down to New York and tried to do a national humor magazine. I've been trying to do this for about 25 years. So it's wonderful to have it actually going and have people like it so much.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I looked through the first issue, and there's some amazing stuff in it. Some really, really funny stuff. And I love the way it looks. I love the feel of it and all that
stuff.
Thank you. Now, Michael, where did you grow up?
I grew up in St. Louis and then moved to Oak Park for high school.
And my
wife is actually born and raised in Oak Park, so my family is in Chicago now, and certainly I'll be telling them about this interview. They'll all be huddled around the radio.
That's
if people
awesome.
Still do that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. So that's my story. I got to Yale because of the Oak Park River Forest High School newspaper, The Trapeze. I did a humor column in that paper that was well received. And
is it still called The Trapeze?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow, that's a great name.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's one of these things. The paper is Oak Park is a great school for this kind of stuff, where it's a public school, but it also has, for example, no humor magazine, but a newspaper that's 100 years old. Ernest Hemingway was the sports editor on that.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. That's really, really cool. So now, did Chicago humor influence you at all?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's really interesting that you asked me that question, because Chicago is a fantastic place for comedy. And when I was in high school, and then after, when I was coming back from school, I would always make a point to go to Second City. Right. And that was fantastic. I remember seeing Chris Farley when he was literally just starting out, and he was tremendous even then. And that early 90s period, late 80s, early 90s period, was tremendous for those institutions. You know, Stephen Colbert and Tina Fey were around, and I believe the people from the UCB were there too. But although I didn't see them, Amy Poehler and Matt Besser and Matt Walsh and those folks.
Right, right.
But yeah, Chicago. I spent 20 years advising the students at Yale that came through the record, and when they'd ask me what they should do if they want to be in the comedy business, they said, "Don't go to New York, don't go to don't go to L.A., go to Chicago," because my wife went through all the levels of Second City and UCB, and it is the purest, most useful, most wonderful comedy scene in the world, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like your wife. I went through Second City.
And, did you?
And
okay.
While I was going through Second City, Farley was on Main Stage.
It was
pretty unbelievable to see that.
Like I say, it's the purity of commitment. People in Chicago who are studying comedy are really interested in the art of it. When people are in New York or in L.A., they're interested in the art of it, but they're also kind of looking over their shoulder as to how to be successful, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a lot, for example, that's a lot of what's going on with the Bystander, too. The people that are involved, certainly myself running it, and then Brian McConaughey and Alan Goldberg, my co-founders, and Brian is a writer from...
As soon as I saw his name, I went, oh, my God!
he's still doing wonderful stuff. Just everybody has a real love and love of this type of material and a real purity of commitment to it, and you can see it. I think, absolutely.
And let me ask you a question again. We're going to get to the magazine in a second. I just have other questions I want to ask you.
No, I really appreciate it, Nick. I've got my talking points. You know that I'm hitting. These are great.
Well, I wanted to ask you about what was the rivalry and the difference between the Yale guys and the Harvard guys.
Well,
because there was that world of comedy in both of those places.
Well, I mean, there wasn't really any sort of... It's really interesting because one of the Yale guys who I admired the most has just died. He died over the weekend. His name is William Hamilton. And Bill Hamilton was a New Yorker cartoonist for many years. The difference between the record and the Lampoon, the record was primarily cartoonists. And the record was very, very successful up until about 1970. And the Lampoon was successful. Really, it hit its stride in the early 60s. Prior to that point, it was the record, the Yale record, which is the oldest one in the country, that was considered to be this sort of creme de la creme of college humor magazines. But then a generation came through Harvard that really transformed not only the Lampoon, but then what comedy was in America. And those are the people like Chris Cerf, who I just talked to today. He kind of kicked that off in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. But then there's like Doug Kenny and Henry Beard, all the people that eventually went on to start the National Lampoon. So there's a generation at Lampoon of, say, around 65 to 85, which is really unparalleled in the history of American comedy. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
It starts to taper off a little bit after... or maybe I would say maybe it changes after Conan. But Conan is really, you can see he's the culmination of that whole generation. So the record was in and out of business in the 70s, and I restarted it when I got there in 89 because that was what I wanted to do. No matter where I went to school, I was going to do the humor magazine. And so, you know, our main guy in the 60s and 70s was Gary Trudeau.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I guess the record is a little bit, it was a little more cartoon focused rather than writing focused. It was a little more literary rather than television. That's what I would think it would be, a little more witty rather than broad. But, you know, there's no comparison. The Harvard Lampoon is in a class by itself as far as how it's affected American culture.
No question. That's no question. Now, speaking of Lampoon...
And it's hard for me to say that. I want to be honest with you. I'm being big about it.
Are the other Yaleys going to be mad at you for saying that, you think?
Well, no. Actually, the reason that I say that is that when I was a kid in the 90s and I was down in New York trying to get jobs, there weren't, and this is before the Internet, so there weren't a lot of jobs. It was SNL, and there was Letterman, And those were pretty much the only jobs. And the Lampoon guys, man, they had that locked up.
Yeah.
And it was impossible to get in. Now, and I think what really changed with that, one, the internet changed that, so there's a lot more comedy to be written. But two, The Onion. My wife went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Knew those guys, yeah. You know. And they're tremendous, too. And so I think them coming through and being so talented, undeniable, I think that plus the rise of improv as the primary driver of American comedy, I think that's opened it up quite a bit. It certainly made it, you know, like the kids at Yale and the Record now don't have the kind of trouble that me and my writing partner did in the 90s. There's a lot more opportunity.
I always looked at it as, you know, in the decades there was Lampoon, then there was Spy. And then for me, The Onion. And,
yeah, that's exactly right.
And now you guys are doing tremendous work. Seriously,
I mean, thanks for saying so. We've got quite a ways to go before we can be mentioned in that.
Brand. Yeah, but I want to. You know, what you guys are doing is different. What you guys are doing is special, and I want to get to that in a second. But we have to take a break. Okay, Michael.
Great.
Hang on for a second. Michael Gerber is with us, and he is one of the editors and the publisher of a new comedy magazine called The American Bystander. The first issue is available. We'll tell you how to get it. It's really brilliant, filled with unbelievably talented comedy writers. And they're working on a Kickstarter campaign to get that second issue going. And it's very special stuff, and we'll give you all the details on what makes this so special after we take a break. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, we will be playing a round of Would Esmeralda Buy That? That'll be coming up in a little bit. Check us out at Facebook.com/NickDShow and like us. And there you will find a link to the American Bystander. It's AmericanBystander.org. It's a new humor magazine. It debuted last fall. Their first issue is fantastic. One of the founders of American Bystander is with us. His name is Michael Gerber, and we welcome him back to the show. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. Okay, let's talk about how this came together. I looked through the first issue of American Bystander, and I see exactly what you're going for. It has such a wonderful look. Not only is the writing funny, not only did you stack the talent of writers.
That's right.
But you've got really wonderful illustrations. You were talking a little bit earlier about you know, the importance of comics and the importance of illustrations. That's one of the things I really, really, really liked about the way that this thing looks. There are comic strips in it. There are also wonderful drawings and illustrations that go with each piece. Was that something that was set in stone from the beginning, something you wanted to do?
Absolutely. You know, the Bystander is really a reaction to what has gone on in the magazine business for the last 30 years. There was a change in that when it became so hard for magazines to be published profitably, there were certain kinds of magazines that were hit particularly hard by that. General interest magazines would be one. Humor magazines were definitely that. So part of what is going on with Bystander is 20 years or 30 years of people coming up to me saying, you know, it's just like with you, Nick. I love National Lampoon. I love Spy. Why isn't there a magazine like that? And so, you know, at a certain point, I'd say probably 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago now, my friend Brian McConaughey, who is a writer from the early National Lampoon and early Saturday Night Live, and actually early SCTV, too, came to me and he said, you know, I tried to start a magazine in the early 80s, and it was backed by John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Lorne Michaels, all of, you know, Brian's heavy friends in that way. And he said, you know, I know you love humor magazines, and I know that you figured out ways to publish them that are slick. If I was going to do a national humor magazine, how would you do it? And so it took me about 6 months, but I figured out a way that we could do it, and it was this crowdfunding way, this Kickstarter way. And then after that, Brian said, okay, well, then put together, you know, a dummy for me, like a test issue. And so I started working on that, and he liked that. And he said, well, why don't you do a full issue? And so it was a bit like Vietnam, you know, you sort of get into it by degrees. But one of the things that was always really important from the beginning was a lot. I wanted to get a lot of illustrators in, a lot of comic people, comic strips, and also you know, sort of comics, you know, underground comic books kind of things, alternative comics. And I think in part that's because I'm from the Yale Record, which is the illustrator, you know, it was the illustrator capital of the world for so long. But then also my mom is an artist and my uncle's an artist. And I'm just, I grew up around a lot of that too. So I really enjoy artists.
Well, it looks, I mean, you know, it looks fantastic. Now, this is how it started. The first issue, you guys raised enough money on the Kickstarter in like 4 days or something, correct?
Yeah, we did. We blew through our initial $25,000 goal very quickly on the first one. And that was very gratifying because, you know, when I pushed go on that campaign, I had no idea whether there was any interest, you know, and that's because when you work in the publishing business, they tell you there's the conventional wisdom, and one of the things they say is people don't like comedy, they're not going to buy it, and so you know you work in that long enough you start to believe it, even though I certainly buy things like that, and The Onion was successful and all that sort of thing. So when we launched it, that first one, it was like, is there still a market for this? And if we did a really good one, if we did a really quality magazine that felt like a good old classic print humor magazine, would people want it? And we found with that first one, yes, they do want it. Now with the second one, the question is, how big is the audience? So we've raised well past our goal on this one as well, but we really want to try to figure out, well, is, you know, how big is this audience? Because how big it is really is going to determine how frequently we can come out, how much we can pay our writers and artists, and how many pages the thing can be. The first one is 146 pages. I'm looking at the second one now. It's literally up on my computer as we're talking. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to be around the same size. These things are like softcover books.
Yeah.
So they really are meant to be kept. They're not like a disposable magazine.
You know, I want to talk about the first issue, and you know, you've reached your goal. You're at currently you're at $29,265 on issue number 10.
10 days to go.
10 days to go.
10 days more to go.
That's fantastic. But if you're talking about you're looking at how far you can stretch this thing, and if you can raise $100,000, then there are things that you can do. You can offer subscriptions. You can offer other things. Correct.
Yeah, and you know, that's part of the economics of this. One of the reasons there aren't humor magazines being published by big corporations and put on newsstands and all the rest of that stuff now is that magazines are incredibly capital intensive. So that $100,000 number, that seems like a lot, but what we'd be offering is a 4-issue subscription, and what that number comes from is, well, how much money does it cost just to do the most basic of issues? Put one together, you know, not a big thick one, but just a medium sized one, print it up, get it shipped out to everybody. How much does that cost? Turns out that costs about $22,000. So 22 times 4, that's, you know, it's about $91,000. Kickstarter takes 9%. So you have to raise $100,000 for us to know that in advance that we're going to be able to actually develop 4 of these, because I didn't want to get into the typical magazine thing of like taking your money and then not being able to fulfill your order. What we're doing, you know, so if we can get 100,000, we'll be able to say, okay, we know that we'll be able to do 4 of these over the next year. I'm confident we'll be able to do 4 of them anyway. In fact, I'm getting so much material and it's so good that I'm actually looking into, can we up our frequency to every other month or even every month?
Oh, man.
I really, really think that that's possible.
Well,
it's just a question of whether the there's enough people who are willing to pay for it.
Well, you know what? Listen, my audience, this is right up their alley, Michael, and I'm going to be pledging. So,
that's great.
I want to keep this going.
Thank you.
And people can go to Kickstarter right now. We have a link to the Kickstarter campaign on our Facebook page. So go there.
Fantastic.
And if they hit a certain amount, you see this not only quarterly, but they want to maybe make it even more. And this stuff is quality.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about the quality in that first issue and preview the second issue when we come back. Okay, we're going to take a break. All right, Michael?
Thank you, Nick. Great.
Take care. Anyway, we'll be right back. Michael Berger is with us. And give some dough. I'm giving money because this is quality old school comedy. Really brilliant writers, great contributors, great artists. It's fantastic, and it's called The American Bystander. And when we come back, we'll tell you all about the insane amount of talent that was in the first issue and the insane amount of talent that's in the second issue. But go to Kickstarter right now and give them some dough. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll talk more with Michael after we go to the news here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Morning. Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. It's Nick DiGilio. That's me. I'm your overnight guy, your overnight dude, Monday through Friday mornings, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. And we're going to be doing another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? We'll be doing that in a little bit. But I'm talking with Michael Gerber, who's one of the founders of a new humor magazine called The American Bystander. I've looked at the first issue, and it's great. And they've got a Kickstarter campaign going right now for the second issue. They want to see how big this audience can be. They want to see how much people want a great, colorful, beautiful humor magazine. And I'm one of those people that really wants it. Red Lampoon, Red Spy, Red the Onion. And this is in that regard. It's a magazine, though, not like like the newspaper that The Onion is or the online force that The Onion is. I looked at the first issue, and it's great. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks. It's great to be talking with you, Nick.
Hey, how can people get the first issue? The first issue is still available. People can get it. Tell everybody how they can get it.
Well, you can go to our Kickstarter campaign for number two, and we actually have a pledge level where you can get both issues so you can catch up.
Okay.
Also, too, it's available in online bookstores. And any brick and mortar store you can go into, I don't know if Barber's is still around in Chicago. You can go and just ask for the American Bystander, and they can special order it for you via the Ingram database.
Okay.
So it's actually pretty easy to get.
All right, and I want to talk a little bit about that first issue. There's so many
sure.
great things in there. So, first of all, how did you get some of the writers? I mean, I know you've been a part of the comedy scene for a long time, and Brian and you guys,
and Brian too.
You guys know a lot of these people, but man, I mean, you got some heavyweight people in here.
Well, thanks for saying so. That's the way we feel about it too. After Brian had asked me to do the sort of the publishing side, the sort of business model for it, how could it work? Then he and I started kind of reaching out, just in a sort of informal way, to the best people we possibly could. People like George Meyer from The Simpsons, Jack Handy, M.K. Brown, a lot of people from the old Lampoon, Sherry Flanagan. And we asked them, do you have any of this kind of material around? Because that was the other part of it. We knew we wanted to try it, but we only wanted to try it if it was going to be really good. And to our delight, it turned out that a lot of these people did have stuff that was classic sort of magazine-style humor. And they were delighted when we came along and said, give us the piece and we'll put it together in a magazine. We'll see what happens on the first Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So that's how it happened. And that really encouraged us because, when somebody like George Meyer or Jack Handy or Brian McConaughey, for that matter, says, here's a piece, it's tremendous. It's very exciting and very funny. And you put it next to the, put one right on top of the other. And all of a sudden, it's starting to feel like those magazines that you talked about, the old Lampoon or Spy or The Onion, mm-hmm. just today for issue two. Issue two is just filled to the gills. And out of the blue today, I got an email from Rick Meyerowitz, who was an old illustrator for the classic Lampoon. He was the guy who did the Mona Gorilla. He did the Animal House poster. So he's an original gangster.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he called. He sent me something. He said, "Hey, Sean Kelly, who's another early Lampoon guy.
Yep.
Sean Kelly and I have done this piece. What do you think?" And it's this great piece. And so we're talking about. We're going to see if we can stick it into issue two. If we can raise enough money, we'll be able to slap the pages on.
Well. Okay, that should be incentive enough for people to go to Kickstarter right now.
Yeah, it's great.
Give some money.
Great work.
I want to mention a couple of things in the first issue. The piece that first of all, you got Al Jean from the Simpsons.
Yeah, and Al came in after the Kickstarter happened. See, this is the other thing, Nick, is that once this existed, then everybody was like, all these heavy people were like, oh, this is great. We're going to try to get Margaret Cho into the second issue.
Oh.
We've got Michael Ian Black already in the second issue. Everybody's kind of coming out of the woodwork, and that's really exciting, too. But, yeah, Al gave us a donation, and he said, I always wanted to write a piece about what if Rosa Parks wouldn't move to the back of the bus on Ralph Cramden of the Honeymooners bus. And he said, can I write that piece? And I said, Al, you got to write that piece. And so he did. And as we were doing the Kickstarter, I was doing the Kickstarter with one hand, designing the first issue with the other, and then editing Al, with the third hand. And so that is part of the fun of this, is that as it spreads, people kind of come out of the woodwork and say, oh, hey, listen, I've got this piece. Penn Jillette wants to do something for us. He's wow. he's a big Lampoon fan, too. So, it's great.
The Al Jean piece is absolutely hilarious.
I'm so glad.
What would happen if Rosa Parks got on Cramden's bus? And and who did, by the way, and another thing about it, not only is the piece very funny, but there's a wonderful little illustration of Ralph.
I'm glad you like that. I like that, too. Her name is Louisa Bertman, and she does such wonderful work. She's another person who, after we launched the Kickstarter, she came out. She was a friend of Mimi Pond's, who's Mimi Pond is a wonderful and famous cartoonist, who is also in the first issue and in the second, too, now. And she said, I'm a friend of Mimi's. If you need any work, you know, let me know. Maybe there's some place. And when Al put in that piece, I thought, oh, we got to get Louisa to do this because I think she can probably do a great Ralph Cramden. And sure enough, she could do a great Ralph Cramden. The second one, she's got this great caricature of Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm. So she's wonderful. I'm hoping she'll become one of our signature artists.
So in addition to having so many great writers, I do want to mention that you guys got, for your first issue, Terry Jones from Python.
Wrote
a piece.
Huh?
I mean, my God. You know, Terry
Jones.
He's
marvelous.
Yeah.
He's marvelous. That was great, you know, and we hand-delivered it to him. We had terrible problems with the people that were doing fulfillment for us on the first issue, so I spent the first month after publication receiving compliments and apologizing because people's issues were late. So we had to actually hand-deliver Terry's check and his comp issues to him in London, and my partner was over in London and saw him. And expected, you know, from the address that it was going to be some office block in London. Turns out Terry Jones lives exactly where you'd think somebody from Monty Python would live, in this little house, you know, in this park. And it was the best. He's a very nice man.
Amazing. Okay, let's talk about, you know, you mentioned some of the other people that are going to be involved in issue two. But I'm looking at some of the lists. Meryl Marco, who has been on my show a couple of times, one of my favorite writers.
Oh, and Meryl's great, too. Her stuff in the magazine for this issue is great. She's just been so great. Perfect.
And you've got Todd Hanson, one of the founding guys from The Onion, one of the big guys from The Onion.
Yes. And his piece is tremendous, too. And we've got him and we've got John Howell Harris from The Onion. We want to get more and more Onion people in because a lot of what we're trying to do with The Bystander is blend people of different generations. Getting sort of younger writers, men and women, with the older writers, men and women, and sort of seeing what sparks strike.
I love that. I love the fact that it's this combination of generations, and it feels that way in the first issue as well. You can see, you know, like some of the older guys that were like heroes of mine wrote pieces.
And yeah, mine too.
Then there's younger pieces. I mean, you mentioned Michael Ian Black. I mean, this is a younger generation guy who's obviously inspired by your heroes and a lot of the people that are working on the magazine. That's got to be really gratifying.
It is, but here's even the best part. I'm so glad you sort of went down this road because this is something I don't really get to talk about very much with it. So you've got the old pros, right? You've got the people that are sort of coming up now, or are successful now. But one of the parts of this magazine that I feel most important, or I feel is most important, I feel is most dear to me, is the way that we are trying to find talent that hasn't been discovered and put them in this magazine so that they can get launched a little bit. I told you earlier in that first segment how difficult it was for me to get started in this business, and it's really just absolute, you know, bloody-mindedness, pugnacity that's kept me in for as many years as I have been in. We're trying to find men and women who can write funny or draw funny or whatever, and try to give them a push at the beginning of their career by putting them next to people like Al Jean or George Meyer. So that's really an important part of this.
Yeah. Well, I love the whole idea. The first issue is great, and I can't wait to see the second one. One more time, remind everybody about how they can give some money to the Kickstarter, and what are some of the rewards that people can have if they go to Kickstarter right now and give some dough.
Well, that's the best way to get issues both one and two is to go to our Kickstarter campaign on I believe it's Kickstarter.com. Yeah, not Kickstarter.org.
It's Kickstarter.com. Yes, but if for our regular listeners, we have it linked up on our Facebook page. So
yeah,
to make it easier, if you go to Facebook,
that's exactly the way to do it.
Right.
And we've really and with the with this campaign, we're not doing anything like stickers or T-shirts or anything like that or hats. Although enough people ask that maybe I'll see. I'll look into that before it ends. But currently, the rewards are you can get an electronic copy, a PDF copy of issue one and issue two, or a printed copy of issue one and issue two. And I have to say, even though the print one is more expensive, it is definitely worth it because you really get that sense of what magazines used to feel like. That first issue, you know, I'm amazed that you have read any of it because it's just there's so much. And the second one is going to be similarly just packed to the gills. You can put it in your bathroom and read it for 6 months.
Well, it's great stuff, and we're of the same ilk, Michael. This is I grew up reading these magazines, and it's just it feels like it's a classic piece of comedy with new comedy in it, and I just think it's great. I absolutely think
yeah,
it's great.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I get that Nick, that you understand this, and the people that understand it, they just love it, and that is so gratifying because I have to tell you, it's a ton of work.
No, I bet. Oh no, I was in the magazine business for a little while. It was just a small entertainment magazine here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's not
but
easy.
You got out. That's a good idea. You're smart man.
Well, you're getting right back into it. So there you go.
I know. I can't help it. My parents, you know, they're so nice to me, but they just look at each other and go, well, how did he get into that business?
Well, everybody go to Kickstarter and give some money. This is quality stuff, really, really good stuff, made by people who are genuinely talented and genuinely care about the product. Michael, it's great, and I love The American Bystander, and I can't wait for the second issue.
Oh, Nick, I think you'll love it. And thank you so much for talking with me. It's really been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot. Have a good morning, okay?
You too.
All right, take care. There's Michael Gerber, who is one of the founders of this humor magazine called The American Bystander, which is loaded to the gills with amazingly talented writers, both new and old and influential and, cutting-edge stuff, great illustrations, beautiful magazine, great stuff. If you are a fan of National Lampoon or Spy or Onion and you just love great satire, great parody, and great comedy, you need to give some money to Kickstarter and make this thing a regular thing. I mean, they want to go quarterly, but they could do it monthly if they raise enough money. This is good. If you like comedy, get the bucks and give it to Kickstarter right now. All right, and you can also check out AmericanBystander.org.